Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another episode of the Self-Build Plus podcast, where we chat with self-builders, suppliers, and experts about all things home building and renovating in Ireland on both sides of the border. I'm Astrid Matson, your host and the editor of Self-Build Magazine. And I have the pleasure today to be joined by Jonathan Orr of Daniel George Kitchens. So just to give a bit of context, I suppose, on a new build or an extension or any new kitchen, what we're seeing anyway on the self-build side is that kitchens probably cost from 10 to 30 grand. Obviously, they can cost a lot more than that, and I'm sure Johnny will have some information as to how you can spend that much more. But no matter what way you look at it, I suppose it's a big investment. So we've gathered questions from our self-build community to guide our chat. So I guess we might as well get started, Johnny. And the first question we got was, how big should a kitchen really be for everyday practical use? So I'm thinking here, probably, if we're talking about a family, the few kids, the tendency might be to try to get a huge kitchen, but what's the optimal size?
Yeah, a lot can end on the space that you've got to put the kitchen into. But I mean, when we go to shows, generally we have a space of about 6 meters by 6 meters, which is great. But you know, you can get a nice space, maybe 3 to 5 meters even. So it really depends, like you say, is it a big family, small family, what you need to get that kitchen space, you know, determine that, you know.
Okie dokes. So then how about the must-haves? What do you really need in a kitchen, and what's trending at the moment?
There's a lot of what we're seeing is a lot of pantries going into kitchens. So people are liking even architects are designing into the space like a pantry that's separate from the kitchen, and that it's not part of the cabinetry. It's like another wee small room off the side of the kitchen, and maybe they'll put like a sliding door onto the front of that, or hidden doors over the top of it. But it's nearly like a space within the kitchen that's, when you open the door, here's all your food and maybe stuff all sort of hidden behind there. So that's quite a big trend. Islands are still something a lot of people want. And seeing that a lot of people are designing their kitchen a lot of the times around the thought of having an island in there. So that, I would say, is a big plus point that people are looking for. That would be two of the big ones off the top of my head.
Yeah. And in terms of savings, what can you do in terms of design, even with choice of materials, things like that? What can you do to try to rein in that big budget?
A big expense when you actually first think about a kitchen can be your appliances. So electrical appliances can range you know, you could spend maybe £1,000 on a range up to £10,000 on a high-end range. So really thinking about your appliances is one of the big areas where you can save a lot of money in your kitchen, and thinking about that. And when you're thinking about appliances, it's a good idea to think about appliances that give a good warranty as well, so that you're not maybe putting an appliance in years' time, your warranty's run out, and there's another expense there. So that's got to think that way too in regards to appliances. Material-wise, yes, again, for instance, worktops can be a big difference in your expenditure. You can go from Formica worktops right up to stone worktops. And then within the stone worktop, now you've got man-made stones, which would be the lower end of the market, up to granite marbles are going into the more expensive. So you could spend $2,000 or $3,000 maybe on a smallish kitchen on the worktops, up to $8,000 if you went for granites. So there's a lot of difference there. And then in your cabinetry too, depending on what you do there, you could go for slab sort of plain doors up to like an in-frame, like IME, where you've got frames around the doors, and it's more of a classic looking kitchen. So, and there's right there.
And how much more would that add to go for the in-frame?
Probably from what we'd say a normal Blumhenge kitchen, where it's a kitchen. The two differences between an in-frame and a standardized kitchen. In-frame is where you see the hinges. So if you can see behind me, you can see butt hinges up onto those cupboards. There's a frame around the door, and the door is inside the frame. Whereas the other type of kitchen is what we call a lay-on kitchen, where it's got the more like an adjustable hinge inside the cupboard. From difference between those, maybe 25 to 30% difference on the joinery. So you say your joinery is, you know, 15,000 to lay on, then you might be pushing up to 8,000 in frame.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Any other tips, advice? I suppose there's also all the gadgets that is that really where the budget busters are? All the hot water taps and
that's right, hot water taps. And that's as your must haves. A lot of people are asking for those as a must have in their kitchens. A lot of people come in and they'll say, I really want a hot water tap and I want a dandruff type of hob system. Because they're big sellers at the moment. And also handles can be something that you'd be surprised what you can spend on handles in a kitchen. You can get one handle that costs £3 or £4, and you can go and pick a high-end handle at £20, £25. So that can be actually suddenly be spending £2,000 or £3,000 just on the handles. So that's also something to keep an eye on.
And so mistakes people make, pitfalls, common mistakes to avoid.
Mistakes we make. I would say when people are initially designing their house, especially on new builds, sometimes the space for the kitchen can be not really that well thought out. Maybe they're getting the house plans together and it's drawn out, and they haven't really thought about the layout of the kitchen when they're doing their initial planning with the architect. And I think it's a very good idea to be going into your architects and saying, listen, I want big space for putting tall cupboards, for instance. I like wall ovens rather than a range. So I'm going to need an area in this kitchen where I've maybe got 3 or 4 meters where I can put two double ovens maybe and a pantry. I don't want windows everywhere. So sometimes what happens is people come up and they want all these things in the kitchen. You say, but hang on, you've got a window there and you've got a window there. So we're not able to do what you're saying. And maybe another thing is they want the island. They really want a big island. And suddenly the way that the kitchen's been designed, they don't have the space in the room. So you've got to think about that. That would be some pitfalls from the design side of things. And then going forward, maybe with builders and things like that, sometimes I've seen it when somebody wants a sink or a hob in their island, so they're going to need electric or they're going to need plumbing in their island. And that hasn't been planned right from the start. So the subfloors are maybe in and there's no dandruff system or there's no plumbing for the island. Yeah.
So on the topic of violence, that's a the very popular one. How much space do you need then?
I would suggest, as a rule of thumb, a meter to 1200 between a cabinet and an island to make it. If you've got a good sized room, I'd be saying 1200 millimeters between your cabinets and the island. And that really will help determine what size your island is in the space, because you want that. Sometimes you can creep that up a bit, maybe if, for instance, the island was against a wall or close to a wall that you're not walking around all the time. So you can have a bit of a smaller space. But say if it's your island and your sink, you need a good space there. I'd be saying a meter is a nice space to have at least. Yeah,
I suppose if you're stuck by a wall, would it save space to kind of have it as a peninsula, or what are those called when it's jutting out from...
Yeah, that's right.
Ways to design around that if you're a bit...
If you can't just get the island, sometimes you can bring a peninsula off the wall, and you'll create a bit of a space.
Yeah, so on that, we had a question in about a built-in dining table in the island. Is that a good idea?
As you can see, I'm sitting on one here. Well, you might just see it, but that's actually I'm sitting on, so that you can see the sink tap behind me. So it's something that we can do. It's you just need to make sure that your manufacturer can do that. But it's something that we show in the showroom here, so we do it quite a bit. Bespoke island with the seating in it is really nice. Just think about the practicalities. Is there little children in the house that will be jumping up playing with the hot water tap in the background? You know, so you need to just think about that. And also you need to think about the space in the room. You need a good sized room to get the dining seat in and get at least 3 people into that seat. This one I am sitting on is a curve on it. You can get about 2 to 3 people on it. So then if you get your designer to help you work out the space in the room with the dining table, and are you going to get enough seats around the rest of the dining table? So usually you have 2 or 3 seats built in, and then you'll have 2 or 3 chairs around your table. So that'll give you your 5 or 6 seats at the table. So again, depending on the size of your room, but it's a nice feature, yeah.
So I suppose the question that we got the most of was a sink or hob in the island. What is the verdict?
Sink or hob. Yeah, that's a good one. Quite often that'll also determine on maybe the extraction system that you're looking for. So some people really like a sink looking out a window. And then on the other hand, I have clients that want a sink. So when they're standing at the sink, they can look into the rest of the room. So they like it in the island. If you like that their backs to the kitchen, the island's facing out into the living room. And when they're at the sink, they can be looking and socializing with the rest of the family. So that's a thing. So I probably see more sinks than hobs, I would say, in the island. Yeah. But if you're putting a hob into the island, then you need to be thinking about your check. You know.
What's the options there then for the extractor found in the island? Do you need one in the first place? What if you have a centralized ventilation system, like a heat recovery?
Yeah, if you have a centralized system, then that's getting away the airflow, so that's a good thing. But they say you would need to still put in something to pull away the grease from the cooking area. So a downdraft system can do that by recirculating. So if you suck the air into a recirculating downdraft system, then you're going to pull the grease out of the air, and then your mechanical vent system will pull away the steam and things. If you don't have that system, then you can just go for a normal downdraft system, which is extracted outside. But just remember to make sure you get the extraction system in under the floor, get it into the island. And that they do work very well. They've come a long way in the last few years. You'll see demonstrations where the cooker's sitting there and it's just sucking the steam straight down into the downdraft. And then if you don't like the downdraft, you can also go for maybe a bulkhead above the island. And some people would shape that. They could make that bespoke, make that the same shape as the island and put a ceiling extraction in above that. And that's a nice feature too. You can make a nice feature out of that.
And the whole passive house thing of there, you know, there's in terms of the airflow. So will, like, because anytime you make a, you put a, any kind of pipe out through the wall in a passive house, you have to be really careful. So I guess, that there, what requirements would be there?
In a passive house, I don't think you're supposed to put in extraction that's going to connect to the outside. So that's why people would put like an extractor in, pull grease away, but it would be recirculating. Wouldn't be connected to the outside, and sometimes they just want to put something above the hub to make it look right and stuff. And so yeah, with the passive house, to say you shouldn't have the extraction system, that's the recirculating heat system in the house, you shouldn't have that directly above and stuff like that. It should be over the side or something like that.
And so the just to stay on the islands, the ideal size for the island itself, is there a minimum size, an optimal size?
Actually, islands, depending what you want to get into the island, but a nice size for an island, I always think, is to go a meter deep, if you've got the room. So you can put cupboards either side, or you can maybe have a breakfast bar area. You can have stools. So you'd have, say, your 600 millimeter deep cupboards on one side. Maybe you've got your sink or your hob there. Then on the other side, you can have shallower cupboards or some seating area there with things. So a meter is a nice sort of depth of an island, and then depending on the size of your room, going the other way, you can go from up to 3 meters, between them up to 3.6 meters, depending on the size of the room. And that's really coming into when you're designing the kitchen. What's this island? Do I want it to be a real central focal point? So that determines the size. But like I've got a small kitchen myself at home, and I made a little bespoke island, and it is 1500 by 500. It's a little narrow one, but it's great because because I don't have a big kitchen, suddenly we've got near a little bit of extra workbench to stick the plates out for plating up. So yeah.
And how about electrical points and other things that need to go in the island?
Definitely a good idea. Make sure you remember those, because I would say most people, you want an electric point, especially with everyone with laptops and with phones for charging. So people really would miss sometimes. I've seen people saying, I wish I had an extra plug in the island. So something I would push for is make sure you get some good socket points in your island. And all you need to do there is make sure you tell your electrician, look, I want a couple of socket points, maybe it's better your island. You can do that a couple of ways. You can get your joiners to put sockets, at the side of the island into maybe the gable ends, or also you can do pop-up plugs if you like those. But generally people put a socket at the side of the island, you know, for their appliances, etc. and computers.
Yeah, and the USB ones are very handy, actually.
They are.
For charging, so you don't have to have the adapter.
They're nice. Yeah.
And so in terms of tips, in terms of walk-in pantries, how do you get the most out of your pantry?
Walk-in pantries, as I say, they're quite a trend at the moment. So I would say getting a sink in there is a great idea, like a prep sink. It's really nice because you can use that area maybe to peel the veg, to do that. And then you've got your visitors over, you can close the door over, and, you know, it keeps your rest really looking good. So a prep sink's a nice idea in there. Also, sometimes a small fridge, maybe like a small underbench fridge, is also nice to have in there, so you can keep the milk, you go in, make a cup of tea, everything's in there. And a lot of people with built-in larders like that, walk-in larders, would have maybe paneling on the wall with open shelving. So they would have like brackets, wooden brackets holding up the, which is quite nice because it's that whole idea, you walk in, all your food sitting there. And I think that's a place a lot of people are putting their groceries. So they go out and all their cereal boxes, their baking goods, they're all sitting there, and you can just walk in, you grab exactly what you want. And again, you can pull the door behind you, and it's really tidy.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
And how about magic corner cupboards? You know, the fancy ones. Yes. With all these sleek mechanisms. Yes. Pros and cons, are they worth it? I'm assuming they cost a bit.
Yeah, you're probably adding a couple of hundred pounds on to put on. There's two types. There's one called a Le Mans corner, which is it's basically a shaped like a Le Mans racetrack. That's why it's called that. So it's inside the cupboard. And then the other one, it would be independent of the door. So you open the door and then you pull that little mechanism sort of comes out. They work very well. They make good use of a cupboard. They always would say a corner cupboard is one of the biggest wasted spaces in a kitchen. So they work well, but they don't utilize all the space. So people will sometimes pull out the Le Mans corner and go, oh, it doesn't hold very much. And that's true. They don't utilize all that cupboard because of the way they work. Whereas just a standard, as we would call it, an excess space, you've got to get it down on your hands and knees, and you're going to end up poking in stuff that you don't really use very much. So then there's the argument, well, does it need to be in the kitchen? Very much so. That's the two sort of arguments. Clients can be, yeah, they usually have a choice of what they like. You get them saying, I love that, and or else I hate that. Yeah, so it's one of those.
Yeah. Question about popular colors for kitchens. What's on trend? What colors?
Yeah, what colors are we seeing? We're still very popular with the whites and the sort of neutral colors. But we are seeing, what's sort of coming through. We're seeing not terracotta, but some sort of off sort of shades, like really light, coming through with green. That's just starting to come through now as well. But still the greens are quite popular. We've seen greens over the last couple of years. So quite often you would do like a neutral color on the the L-shaped part of the kitchen. And then you might get an island where you want a green or even a blue coming through. So grays were a big thing a number of years ago. Not seeing grays as much now, you know, so it is going towards those pastel sort of colors. Yeah. So like greens and blues and those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives a bit of life, I suppose.
Yeah,
it's quite nice. And the taps and things like that, are we still on chrome mostly, or are you seeing more like gold, like you'd see in bathrooms that are trendy, or even still, like copper or those kind of colors?
Yeah, chrome is probably still the biggest seller, but you would see brasses and antique brasses coming through. And often those are matching a handle. So a client really likes a brass handle, for instance, then they'll go looking for a brass tap. And there's some really lovely stuff now. And the antique brass, I've seen that coming in quite a bit too, where it's there's a brandiness to the brass, if you like. That's an easy way to say that. And you're seeing that coming through with the taps. And all the tap makers have got lovely selection now. And you can even go into back taps now as well. And again, you're a lot of the time that's matching the handles of the kitchen so that you're seeing those accents come through. Yeah.
And then there's a question about standalone fridges. they're a bit of a pain to design around American fridges, that kind of thing. Any tips around those? How do you integrate that in the lovely kitchen you have behind you?
This one behind me, we got a lot of integrated. So I've gone off standalone. I'll go back to standalone. But integrated machines are made to go inside the standard 600 deep cupboards. So if you go for integrated, that's not a worry. If you, and I would imagine standalone is usually in a big American fridge freezers, which are can be very deep. If you're using standard cupboards, you can sink the American fridge freezer that a little bit so that it looks flush at the front. Yeah, I would agree. You want that looking flush at the front. It looks far, far better. So bring your cupboards forward and maybe have a deeper gable at one end. And if you go to a manufacturer, most manufacturers will be able to make the units go around an American fridge.
And anything to know about integrated appliances, just kind of that whole flush look, it does cost more, doesn't it? Or how?
I would say they're not as bad as you think. Integrated appliances, depending on the brand that you buy, they start at one point and go right up to three or four times the price. So it really depends on what you go, but there's lovely integrated appliances around now where you can have two doors on a fridge. You don't have to have a single door anymore. You can do drawers integrated. You can also do dishwashers now with drawers that are integrated. So integrated appliances, there's a real lovely selection out there, and they are great because they completely hide away into the kitchen. On those, just do your shopping. There's lots of them out there. Yeah. And look about for them, yeah.
And a question here about Brexit. Would you be able to fit kitchens in the Republic down south?
Yeah.
Yourself? So,
yes, we do. Yeah, no problem. Yeah. Yeah, it's no issue at all. Yeah. Yeah.
Brexit is sorted. Can we forget about Brexit yet?
Exactly. No, Brexit doesn't worry us on that front at all. No.
Okay. In terms of natural timber, is that being use more in kitchens now than I suppose the biophilic green.
Yes,
blend
I think that would be right. You're seeing natural timbers coming through, and you're seeing one of the trends I would say in timbers. You're seeing stained timbers. So a lot of customers are asking us for oak, maybe in a breakfast bar or like the back of a breakfast bar, or like a little wall, one wall in the kitchen, and it's not just natural oaks now, they're looking for stained oaks. And you're seeing a lot of that in floorings that are coming through. So like gray stains or brown stains on the oak. And that's actually a lovely feature. It looks really well. And then we can match our dovetailed drawers and things like that to those stains. So you can bring all that through into the kitchen.
And how do you care for those materials in a kitchen, especially it's there's a lot of water and wear and tear. You're always at pawing at that stuff. How do you care for that?
Yeah, so you do need it, like you're in the kitchen, you need to think about the practicalities of the kitchen. If you have small children in the house, it's not a practical thing to bring in those sorts of finishes because they've got a lot of wear and tear. What you can do on a breakfast bar is put a piece of glass over the oak to look after it, and that works well. You can still see the oak, but you've got the practicality of a nice piece of glass on there. It won't try thing. But again, yes, you've got to be careful with work surfaces like an oak. It will mark, yeah.
And then another question about painted kitchens then, in terms of chipping around the dishwasher and integrated fridge freezers, how quickly does that happen, I guess, is the question. And how do you prevent that from happening?
We would do a lot of painted kitchens ourselves, and there's two ways you can go with painted kitchens. You can go factory painted, so it means it's painted in the factory of your manufacturer, and then you can go for hand painted. We would recommend hand painted, especially with a high end sort of in frame kitchen, because of what you're saying, chipping and paint finish will chip. There's no way around that. If you have paint that's like on your walls and it gets a bash, it's gonna and get chipped. So the beauty with hand painting a kitchen is you can touch it in yourself. You'll get your paint that you painted the kitchen with. You'll be able to just brush it yourself. So it's easy repair. And the beauty with a hand painting kitchen is you can hand paint it again in 3 to 4 years. It looks brand new. You maybe have got tired of the color and you want to change it slightly, then you hand paint it and it's absolutely brand new again. But like you say, dishwashers and around certain areas, like the bin, integrated bins in kitchens, they're the places that are used a lot. So they're the places that first of all show the wear and tear. And it depends on the clients too, how well they treat the kitchen. Rings on fingers and things like that can sometimes mark. So it's just being careful on how you look after it too.
So then would you recommend a laminate kitchen over a painted one, just in terms of durability?
Yeah, if you were, say, you said, look, I've got three or four little children running around and they've got little trikes and they're beating around the kitchen, then I would be saying to the client, is it really what you want, a hand painted kitchen? Because look, it's going to get bashed. So then you'd be steering that client towards maybe a laminated kitchen, yeah, and you get lovely doors out there, maybe slab, which is just, and you can get those with the formica on them, which is very durable. And you can get gloss and matte on those. That's where you would be steering the client towards that. So it's sometimes you get a client say, yeah, maybe that's what I'll do initially. And then 5 years' time, I'll get the kitchen if they really want the laminated, you know, handmade kitchen, then they'll go towards that point.
Yeah. And time frames for getting kitchens delivered and installed, what's the story at the moment?
We would work on an 8 to 12 week lead time. Once we get into the factory, we're talking about an 8 week lead time for making it. So what clients need to remember is it takes a bit of time to get design sometimes sorted out. So you need a lot of time to go back and forth looking at 3D drawings, see, is that what I want in my kitchen? And sometimes that can eat into the time. So allow for the time in the design process. But if you're aligned 12 weeks, you can get your designs and everything done within that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just what height is ideal for double ovens?
Oh, double ovens. If I was doing a single oven, I would put it above the height of a standard base unit door, which is about 750, and including the plinth, which is 880. So about 880 for a single oven. So if it's going with a double oven, I'd come down to another couple of hundred, maybe 500 to 600 mils off the floor. That would be sort of where I'd be thinking. But again, depends on the height of the person too. So think about, you know, where you ideally want that oven when you're opening it. Is it a nice height for you, you know? Yeah. So you can check that out in the showroom.
And yeah, and the kitchen with no handles, is that out of date now or is that still something?
No, you're still seeing it. So you would see that in a kitchen. Generally, you would see that in a kitchen where it's the modern sort of slab looking kitchen where they don't want any handles. It's very minimalist. So you can still go for those. Just there's different ways you can do those. You can do them with a track. It's like a metal track that runs just under the worktop. And the door then sticks up that little bit so that you just grab the door itself and open it rather than having a handle. Just do the same with the wall units. The door hangs down maybe 20 millimeters below the wall unit so you can just open the door without a handle. Yeah, I do see those still as well, but probably not as much as we used to.
Yeah. And can you, just to go back on the laminated versus hand-painted, can you combine the two? Or
yes, absolutely.
In
yeah.
one kitchen?
Yeah, and we're seeing a bit of that, actually, yeah. So like the kitchen behind me, which is maybe like that classic sort of shaker door, and then you might have in the island slab laminate doors, you know, in the island. So you can have the both types. It's a nice sort of look, and we are seeing a wee bit of that mix and match, if you like, of kitchens. And you could even do one wall section of one type and one wall section in the other, maybe so that the slab one looks like it's integrating with the wall of the kitchen. So, you know, so it's not looking like the rest of the kitchen in a way. It's looking like part of the walls of the house, you know.
Okay. And are you talking, someone was asking, laminated or vinyl wrap?
Laminate or vinyl wrap. Vinyl wrap has a bit of a stigma around it. it used to give a lot of problems with delamination. And I think the manufacturers of that have come a long way on that. There's two types of doors. You can get melamine, where melamine is basically an off-the-shelf plastic-faced door. That would be probably the cheapest type of door. So it's just a melamine face and it has an edge put on it. So the door, the MSC door is made in sheet form and just cut up and edged. Then you have foil wrapped, which is generally an MDF substrate with a plastic wrap over it, put into a heat press. And that's the one that some people are a wee bit worried about, but it's come a long way in that it doesn't laminate, I think, as much. And then from there, you can go for a Formica door, which would be the most robust sort of flat door, I would say, where you have Formica laminated onto maybe a plywood core. And that's a very robust door. Formica is a very strong anti-scratch. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the last question, I promise, can you share some lighting options around the cabinetry and kitchen? How to light a kitchen? I suppose you have different times of day.
That's a big thing too, lighting. I would say inside pantries, make sure you think about lighting, especially in a walk-in pantry. And what's nice is to have it that when you open the doors, it's a sensor, pops the lights on. You can also do the sensor lights in just a standard pantry in your kitchen. So say a double door pantry that's in your kitchen, just open the two doors, get your electrician sensor light in there. Your manufacturer also can put LED strips inside the cupboards. We would do that a lot here, where we put a strip, like a router track, if you like, inside the cabinet. So it's nice and hidden. And the new LEDs are brilliant, because they don't show the old LEDs, I don't know if you remember, shows like little dots going down them. Whereas now a good LED doesn't have that. So you open the doors, all lights up. So think about your lighting as you're designing the kitchen, because you also want to be thinking for your electrician to make sure you have enough points. Another place to put lighting is in like a floating shelf, is quite nice. So you can put it back into the underside of a floating shelf and it lights down onto the, say, the kitchen worktop, and of course underneath the wall units as well. There's different various ways you can do spot, but a big thing there is LED strips, I would say. That's very popular, yeah.
Very good. And just to finish there, someone commented that they've had their hand-painted kitchen for ages, it sounds like, and it's brilliant, so.
Good.
As you said, it's a good option.
It's a good option, absolutely, yeah. And you can keep re-bringing it back to life, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Thanks so much, Johnny. Really appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Cheers. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Join us next time for more tips and advice from experts and self-builders alike. And if you haven't already, subscribe to Self-Build Plus. It'll give you full access to the selfbuild.ie website, including the Self-Build Plus journey, which is your step-by-step guide to self-building and home improving. Your membership also gives you first access to all videos and podcasts, as well as access to our members-only Facebook group, which features regular Facebook Live events.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.